It's your life. Live it. Live on AWR SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
All right, let's begin our chapter. So what we do is to read the full chapter, Mfundisi, and after reading the full chapter, you give a few comments, and then I ask questions to chew on the various aspects of the verse. Is that okay, Mfundisi?
Good. So I'm the one to read.
No, no, don't worry. I'll read, Mfundisi.
No problem. You can go on.
Okay. All right. All right. I am reading it from the NIV. This is the Bible we have in the studio. But if you prefer a different version, I can go into the screen and try and find the version you prefer, Mfundisi. But the one I'm reading right now is the NIV.
No problem.
Okay.
No problem.
All right. It reads, "Now Dinah, the daughter Leah had born to Jacob, went out to visit the women of the land. When Shechem, son of Hamor, the Hivite, the ruler of that area, saw her, he took her and raped her. His heart was drawn to Dinah, daughter of Jacob, and he loved the girl and spoke tenderly to her. And Shechem said to his father Hamor, 'Get me this girl as my wife.' When Jacob heard that his daughter Dinah had been defiled, his sons were in the fields with his livestock, so he kept quiet about it until they came home. Then Shechem's father, Hamor, went out to talk with Jacob. Now Jacob's sons had come in from the fields as soon as they heard what had happened. They were filled with grief and fury because Shechem had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing that should not be done. But Hamor said to them, 'My son Shechem has his heart set on your daughter. Please give her to him as his wife. Intermarry with us. Give us your daughters and take our daughters for yourselves. You can settle among us. The land is open to you. Live in it, trade in it, and acquire property in it.' Then Shechem said to Dinah's father and brothers, 'Let me find favor in your eyes, and I will give you whatever you ask. Make the price for the bride and the gift I am to bring as great as you like, and I'll pay whatever you ask me. Only give me the girl as my wife.' Because their sister Dinah had been defiled, Jacob's sons replied deceitfully as they spoke to Shechem and his father Hamor. They said to them, 'We can't do such a thing. We can't give our sister to a man who is not circumcised. That would be a disgrace to us. We will give our consent to you on one condition only: that you become like us by circumcising all your males. Then we'll give you our daughters and take your daughters for ourselves. We'll settle among you and become one people with you. But if you will not agree to be circumcised, we'll take our sister and go.' Their proposal seemed good to Hamor and his son Shechem. The young man, who was the most honored of all his father's household, lost no time in doing what they said, because he was delighted with Jacob's daughter. So Hamor and his son Shechem went to the gate of their city to speak to their fellow townsmen. 'These men are friendly toward us,' they said. 'Let them live in our land and trade in it. The land has plenty of room for them. We can marry their daughters, and they could marry ours. But the men will consent to live with us as one people only as they themselves are. Won't their livestock, their property, and all their other animals become ours? So let us give our consent to them, and they will settle among us.' All the men who went out of the city gate agreed with Hamor and his son Shechem. and his son Shechem, and every male in the city was circumcised. 3 days later, while all of them were still in pain, two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and attacked the unsuspecting city, killing every male. They put Hamor and his son Shechem to the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and left. The sons of Jacob came upon the dead bodies and looted the city where their sister had been defiled. They seized their flocks and herds and donkeys and everything else of theirs in the city and out in the fields. They carried off all their wealth and all their women and children, taking a plunder everything in their houses. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, You have brought trouble on me, my man. You have brought trouble on me by making the people living in this me a stench. You have made me a stench to the Canaanites and Perizzites. The people living in this land, we are few in number. And if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed. But they replied, should he have treated our sister like a prostitute? May the Lord bless the reading of his word now and forever. Amen. And what is your comments?
Amen.
Your comments, Mfundisi. You can give your comments and then we can get into the questions.
Okay. Yeah. This is quite an interesting and intriguing story. Genesis chapter 34. The story actually reminded me of a movie that I once watched. The title of the movie was Fatal Attraction. Okay. The sad news was that innocent souls or innocent people lost their lives. So this is the same issue I'm seeing in Genesis 34, where Shechem is attracted to this young lady. And suddenly we are told that the Canaanite men were killed, Shechem and his family were killed. So innocent souls or innocent people were just killed because of the attraction that this guy had on this young lady.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I like the way you're talking. You're characterizing it. So let's first begin with Dinah.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people giving commentary about Dinah. Dinah should not have gone there. What is your take?
Yeah.
At this stage, was there ever an instruction that Dinah should not go there? Did Dinah know any better?
Well, personally, I feel that Jacob had to give guidance to your daughter.
Right.
The daughter, yes. Why the daughter, in the first place, the daughter was not supposed to be associating with the Canaanite. In our own understanding, the Canaanites were like ungodly people. They were like hidden people. So she was playing around in dangerous ground there. Why I'm saying so?
Yeah, go ahead, Mfundisi.
Why I'm saying so, if you read 1 Corinthians chapter 15, that is verse 33, it says, don't be deceived and misled. Evil companionship or associations corrupt and deprive good manners and morals. So this is the issue I'm seeing with Dinah. She was not supposed to be associating. She was not to be friendly with these Canaanites.
Were these Canaanites, Mfundisi?
Yeah, they were Canaanites.
Where do we find that these were Canaanites, Mfundisi?
Hello?
Where do you find that these were Canaanites?
These guys?
Yes, Mfundisi.
Yeah, I think from the from the background where the Jacob and the family settled. So Shechem and these people, they were called the Canaanites.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to establish is where do you get that from, Funis? Where did you see that?
Yeah, that's from commentary, actually.
Okay. So
yes,
let's.
I did not write the quoted the commentary there.
Yeah. So while I totally agree with the sentiment that bad company corrupts good manners, I totally have no problem with that, Mfunis. What I do have a problem with is moving from the premise that she should have known. We don't find it anywhere that she should have known. There is no instruction that these particular people were not to be mingled with.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand. In the previous verse, in the previous chapter, chapter 33, does give intimation. I want to read chapter 33 from verse 18. After Jacob came from Padan Aram, he arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped within sight of the city for 100 pieces of silver. He bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent there. He set up an altar and called it El Elohe Israel. So from there, I can totally agree. In the previous chapter, it does say that this was a land part of Canaan.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the city of Shechem, part of Canaan. I have no problem with that.
Canaan.
What I do have a problem with is when they arrived there, there is no mention that they were not supposed to intermingle with them. There is no mention that at the time, these Canaanites, as we are told, are the same people that their forefather Abraham settled amongst. There was no instruction ever since Abraham, even Isaac's time, there was never an instruction for them not to associate with the Canaanites. The disassociation with the Canaanites came after their exodus. So I need to understand, how do we arrive at the conclusion that Dinah was not supposed to mingle with the Canaanites if they've always lived there? Their forefather lived in Canaan when he lived from the Ur, when he left the Ur of the Chaldeans. He went to settle in Canaan. This is the land that God told them to go and settle in. Isaac raised his two children there in the same land. Jacob raised his family there. Even when they went to Egypt, they were supposed to come back to that land. There was no instruction that they were supposed to disassociate with the Canaanites. How do we as Bible students arrive at the conclusion that they were supposed to disassociate with the Canaanites?
Well, personally, it's like, take for example, us here.
Right.
We are in the world, but we are not of the world. You get me or you understand me?
I hear you, Mfundisi, but there is no instruction that we're not supposed to associate with the world. I totally agree that we are in the world, but we are supposed to minister to the world. This is what Paul was to minister to the world.
You know,
bring them in.
You know when... Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. Go ahead, Mfundisi.
You know, my problem is when we look at these Canaanites, Shechem and these people.
Right.
According to the Bible, they were not godly people.
Right.
You see, they were not godly people. They did not know God. They did not worship the God of Israel.
Where do we get that from, Fundis?
Hello?
Where do we get it from? I'm not disputing it. I just need you to point it to us so that we can read it.
No, if you read even Genesis 24,
right,
I think verse 3.
I'm
trying to come in and zero in on the issue of association with the Canaanites.
Right. Verse 3, Genesis chapter 24, verse 3. From verse 2, it says, he said to the chief servant in his household, the one in charge of all that he had, put your hand under my thigh. I want you to swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I am living. But I hear you, Mfunis. That's what Abraham said there. I'm curious to understand. What was there a reason? Does Abraham give a reason why?
The reason is because if you intermarry with people who are not of the same faith as you, they will draw you away from the God you worship.
But when Abraham sent his servant to go and find a wife for Isaac, he sent him to his own land of idolaters. He found himself a wife. He found Isaac a wife, Rebecca, whose brother was Laban, and we know these are idol worshippers. He found an idol worshipper. They didn't worship the same God of Abraham. So, what was the difference between the Canaanites and Abraham's family, like Rebecca, like Laban, like Rachel and Leah? All the matriarchs of this faith are all idol worshippers.
You see, from Genesis 24, Abraham is actually making his servant a covenant. And he said, you should swear, you don't take any daughters of Canaan.
My question is, why, Vonis? What was the reason for that? Because we know it cannot possibly be because of idol worship, because Abraham himself was called from idol worship. His family was a family of idol worshippers.
Yeah, it's not wrong about idol worship.
What was it
they
about?
They did not know God, number one. They did not worship God. They did not know the laws of God.
That the same applies with his wife. His own wife, Sarah, was like that. Rebecca was like that. Laban was like that. Rachel and Leah, they all did not know God. All those things apply, Infinis.
Yeah, they do apply. But that's what the word says. Don't intermarry. Don't mingle with them. Don't associate with them. You see, the association part of it, like I said before, we are in the world.
Okay.
It does not mean that we don't mingle. We don't make friends with the worldly people. But when it comes to principles now,
right.
This kind of a separation.
Okay, not a problem. Let's move on to the next part, Mfundis. This young man, Shechem, rapes Dinah. The Bible makes a point of saying he raped her, but still loved her. I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure if these two can live together in the same place to love somebody and rape them. Help me understand. What is the Bible talking about there? That this young man loved him, Dinah, and yet raped her.
I'm also puzzled about that one. You see, how can someone rape someone and then suddenly he's attracted to her? He wants to marry her.
Yes, yes. But that's how Moses documents it, that he loved her. I'm not quite sure what Moses was talking about here. I mean, I'm not quite sure I understand. Help me understand, Vunis.
My own perception on this issue, you see, some Bible scholars, they say that this young Dinah, some say she was just in the early teens. You see, so Shechem was a bit an older man who took advantage of this young Dinah.
Not a problem. My question is about the coincidence of love and rape. That's what I'm trying to establish in Funis.
That's a bit tricky now.
we are told that the writer of the Torah, or the Pentateuch, as academia call it, is Moses. My curiosity is, when Moses narrates the story of Dinah being raped by Shechem, it is Moses who says he raped her, but then again, he loved her. And I'm trying to establish this prophet of God, Moses, when he was writing this, what was he talking about? What is he trying to teach us? Is he trying to teach us that you can rape somebody you love?
I don't think so.
Then what is he saying? What is Moses saying here? Why is he capturing the story as a love story and yet there's rape that precedes the love? What is Moses talking about?
Myself, I'm seeing the character of Shechem. You know, like I said before, these guys did not know God.
Right.
They were not godly
people.
So raping someone and trying to marry someone, to him is nothing, you see.
But to Moses as well, Mfundis. I mean, Moses could have said he raped her and then decided he will marry her. Why would Moses call whatever feelings Shechem had love? Why does Moses call it love?
I can't really call it love, you know.
Yeah, you are not Moses, Mfundis. I understand. I understand. You and I are not Moses. I also agree with you, Mfundis. I would not call it love.
Yes.
I totally agree with you, Mfundis. Our sensibilities are totally different. But then again, we're not Moses. Moses had...
That was last, you see.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mfundis. I agree with you. But I'm trying to understand the thinking of Moses, the one who wrote the text for us. What I'm trying to understand is it possible that we are wrong and Moses is right? I mean, this is the Bible, after all. Is it possible that our sensibilities of saying it is not possible for love and rape to coincide?
Rape.
Yes. Maybe we are wrong. Is it possible that we are wrong and Moses is right? Surely both of us can't be right. If we are wrong, then Moses is right. If Moses is wrong, then we are right. Which one is right, Mfundis? Moses or us?
That one is a very tricky one.
shouldn't be very simple. Shouldn't be simple, Mfundis, that the Bible is always right.
yeah, the Bible is always right. You are right.
Yeah, so Moses is
Moses
right.
Wrote this, so this story was written by Moses, rightly saying it. And it's there in the Bible, and it was put there for a specific reason, you see. But what I can deduce from there is that the things that are written in the Bible, they were written for us for our benefit.
Indeed.
For our education.
Indeed. And the way they are written,
for instruction.
Indeed. So the way they are written, Mfundis, is very instructive. You're absolutely right to say it's for our discipline, our approach, our instruction, and so forth and so forth.
Exactly.
So I do wish, Mfundis, that we can put it out there that this is one of the verses that have contradicted our modern day sensibilities to the extent that this verse is suggesting that a man can rape a woman and still love that woman. And perhaps we as all of Christendom need to revisit this text. And if this text is correct, if we believe in the writings of Moses, and if we believe that God inspired Moses to write this in the way that he wrote it, then we need to check our theology.
Yeah.
Then we still need to check our theology and what we teach. We need to check our own sensibilities and realign our sensibilities towards the scripture. Isn't it, Mfundis?
Yeah. You know, this one is also reminding, you know, the story of Amnon.
Yes, Mfundis.
And the sister.
Yes, yes.
Yes. It is more like the same, but now this time around, you see, Amnon raped his sister.
He hated.
As soon as
Tamar.
Yeah, as soon as he does that, he hates her.
Absolutely.
More than how he loved her.
Yes, yes. Yes, Mfundis. So that's the nature of rape.
Now Shechem is raping, but he's loving.
Yeah.
Yet Amnon is raping and hating. That's normal to us now.
Again, so here's something that was said to me by another pastor. He said, while we call this rape, and why Moses, as he wrote, called this rape, it was rape in the sense that there was no marriage before, or there was no consent given by the parents for this girl to have sex with this man. But what may have happened is that both of them, Dinah and Shechem, exactly. But it was deemed as rape, as even today in South Africa, I don't know in other countries, but all four first world countries, an underaged person, if in South Africa you are a 15-year-old girl and the boy is 16 years old and you both consent to have sex, that's statutory rape in this country.
Right. Exactly. So this is the same issue with these guys.
So the pastor was suggesting
the girl is underage.
That's what the other pastor was suggesting to me, that this may be described as rape in the same manner. Not because he forcefully penetrated her, but because they were not allowed by the laws of Israel to have sex, and that may have been rape. What is your take as far as that is concerned, Mfundisi?
Yeah, I think the pastor is right. Yeah. Because the Bible did not tell us that, you know, we are just told the story that he raped her.
Right.
We are not told how did Diana reacted. Did she consent or not?
Absolutely.
We don't know.
Absolutely.
We are just theologizing here.
Yes, 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 indeed.
Maybe the pastor may be right, surely. Why am I supporting him? I think the age of Dana, she was in early teens.
Right.
Meaning she was underage.
Right,
even
right.
Even here in the laws of Zimbabwe, if you sleep with someone who is below the age of 16, it's statutory rape.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe they may love us. They still love each other.
Right.
And Shechem still loves Dana. But because they did an act that is outside the law.
Right.
So it's a rape.
Okay.
But between the two of them, there is love maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I hear you. Yeah. I hear you.
So, Moses is saying he loved her. He wanted to marry her.
Yeah.
Even if they slept, he raped her, he slept with her, he wanted to marry her, to take her as his. His wife.
Right,
so,
right.
They must have been laughed there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I suppose that settles that discomfort.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about these boys. Hey, Mfundisi, when you look at the sons of Jacob, the sons of Jacob appear to be just as manipulative, as deceitful as their father. These boys, they create a false impression that they would give if these guys circumcised. Man, this idea of lying is in this family. This is a family of liars and manipulators and deceitful.
Exactly.
The level of lies in this family. Yo.
So we can safely say deceitfulness runs in the family.
Exactly.
So and others is rightly say that like father, like son.
Exactly, like father.
The father was a deceitful man.
Yes.
The sons are doing the same thing.
Yo.
Yeah, like father, like son.
Indeed. And now he pretends to be shocked. This very same Jacob in verse 30. He pretends to be shocked now that his sons are deceitful liars to the extent, Mfundisi, that they go a step further. They go and kill. I think they have bested their father there, Mfundisi. Their father was a manipulative liar, but he never went around killing like these boys.
Yeah, he did not go that far. Yes, yeah.
So what are we? Yes, go ahead, Mfundisi.
I think I have to blame the Jacob, the father.
Okay.
You know, I can see some issues of family life in this story of Dana being raped.
Okay.
You know, when he got the news that the daughter was raped, we are not seeing his action.
Yeah.
He's a sort of passive guy, father there.
Yeah.
He's sort of a silent father in this issue.
Yeah.
He's not acting on anything. Rather, we are seeing the sons who heard the story. They become furious, you know, to the point that they wanted to revenge what the act that was done on their sister.
Yeah.
But the father could have counseled, you know.
You know, this is the same thing that David did. Do you remember when Tamar was raped? David was just as benign, just as lame, just as weak.
Yeah.
That's why his son decided, I'm going to avenge my sister. It appears as if these men take rape very lightly.
Yeah. Well, me personally, I've got issues with Jacob, the father. He's very passive, man. How can you be told that your daughter has been raped and you become silent? You are not acting.
So what are you saying, Funes? You know, are you saying you support the action of these boys?
You know, my mind went back to the marriage of Jacob and Leah.
Right.
In the first place, this woman was not what he wanted, actually.
Right.
You know, he was in love with Rachel, remember?
Right.
So this marriage came by default.
Right.
Because of lack of wedding.
By manipulation, because Laban treated Jacob. Exactly.
So I don't think he's there 100% in this marriage.
Oh.
You know.
So even the children of Leah.
Yeah. Wow. So Leah just became his wife. So I'm seeing family issues. Like his silent father in this marriage, man. How can you do that?
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
You.
Yeah, so, that's what I can see here. Yeah.
So because Dinah was the daughter of Leah, he didn't care. That's what you're suggesting?
That's my thinking. He did not care because he did not love the mother. When you cannot love the mother, how can you love the daughter? So there's no love there.
Sure.
The marriage of default.
So the children suffer from not being loved. They also don't get loved because the father didn't love their mother either.
Exactly. So this daughter is not getting the guidance, the love, the guidance, the teaching of the father. He's just silent. A silent father in the marriage there.
Sure.
Hence he could just go and do what he wants, go and, you know, associate with others. He's just silent.
Ah.
That's where the mistake is. That's my take.
I hear you. Mfundisi, we're going to leave it right there. Our time is up. Thank you so much for coming through. Don't forget, Nick, on Wednesday, we're doing, doing chapter 33. Not chapter 35, but chapter 33. Yeah. Yes, Mfundisi.
Okay, 33.
Yeah.
Ah, my pleasure. Thank you for hosting me and having me.
Thank you very much, Mfundisi. I appreciated your time and your insight. See you on Wednesday, Mfundisi.
Thank you. Good day.
All right. That's Pastor Maupa, who is our pastor for the week. He is our chew on that pastor. And we were chewing on chapter 34 of the book of Genesis. Yo, I tell you. Hey, this perspective of Jacob not loving Leah and therefore not loving the children. Okay, that's an interesting take there. That's why I like this feature. I learn.